This is a lecture by L. Ron Hubbard, given on the 20th of June, 1963. The title of this lecture is History of Psychotherapy. This tape is 78 minutes long. Reproduced by Golden Era Productions.
Meet Body's cook. What's the date? Okay, 20 June, AD 13. St. Hill Special Briefing Course. I was thinking what I could tell you that might make auditing easier. I'm not in a position at the present moment to give you a history of auditing on the whole track that would be a complete history. But I know quite a bit about it, and it's pretty stinking. It all goes along the traditional psychiatric lines. Evaluate, invalidate, you know, the psychiatric code. Evaluate, invalidate, and so forth. Now, it might strike you as peculiar that if this universe has been sitting here this long, that nobody ever got very practical about digging anybody out of it. And That's because, there's a very good reason for this, is the guys who consistently remain in charge are usually in sufficiently good shape that they are not terribly worried about their own condition. You see that? So it makes a continuous authoritative level of not interested. That's quite interesting. Because new blood comes into this universe, I suppose even today, and these boys haven't gone the route, and so on. By the time they have, they've usually lost out, and so they're no longer in a position of authority. But there have been spells of auditing of sorts, but you wouldn't call it auditing. But as much as I've been around in this universe, I have never encountered an effective therapy. That's quite interesting because it goes contrary to the fondest hopes of the religionists. It rather plows in the legend of the kahuna kapuna kapunas, who all they had to do was go kahuna kapuna and something. This is an unworkable level. There haven't been workable therapies. There have been by the bootstraps recoveries, which are rather spectacular. And as you look back over the whole track, you'll find that you've been going on a roller coaster. You've spent some time in a meat body, and then the next thing you know, there you were, operating Thetan, see? And for a while, why, you're pushing a doll body around or something like that, and then, boom, why, you're operating thing. And then you push a meat body around for a while, and then spend a few million or trillion years in a trap or something like that, and then you come out the other end of it, and suddenly and mysteriously, why, there you are chucking planets around or something like this. It's all very difficult for a person to reconcile. And what am I doing? What am I doing? Being up, being down, being up, being down. There isn't one of you who hasn't been in meat bodies on the whole track many, many times. Many times and places, you see. And who succeeded this act, who didn't succeed this action by being an OT, you see. Quite interesting. And vitally necessary to your understanding of the situation because it gives you false hope. You say, well, what must have turned? What must have turned the dials on my life like this? What mysterious thing happened that would suddenly make me 9 Empire State Buildings tall? And what turn of the road did I hit that brought me into a state where I could, cut earth in half and serve it up as watermelon? See, what did I suddenly do that brought this about? And then also, what did I do that made me suddenly feel so weak? And how come a few trillennia later, why, here I am, a professor of medicine in the College of Fine Arts or something, and Husgal University or something. How? What? Dizzy. Very dizzying. Up 1 minute, down the next. You go along the track looking for a miracle, because it must have been a miracle. You didn't know anything about it. Very peculiar things went on. You're on a stake trap of some kind or another, and some bird out of the goodness of his heart grabbed you by the scruff of the neck and threw you up into the sky. Or somebody else fortuitously put a charge in the planet and blew it to splinters that you happened to be trapped on, and you fortuitously went flying out into space. And next thing you know, there you are tromping around in your bare feet a light year tall, see? And you say, well, it must have been that I just felt that way when I was on the stake, and when I was off the stake, why, then I felt okay. And can't happen to me again. And then the next thing you know, why, there you are pushing a broom at Husgau University, feeling very apathetic. Well, I'd like to point out something to you. The cycle is getting shorter. See, that's the trick. You stay up less long. You go down quicker. And what is this mysterious thing that suddenly brings you into prominence where you're flexing the biceps in all directions and so on? What is this mysterious thing? Well, I can't even now give you a full answer that I would guarantee to stay solid for the next some trillennia years. But it's the opportunity more than anything else, and a necessity level. And then you find out you can, and there you are, and so you can go along for a while. Because you see, you aren't naturally a matchbox tall. You see, that's probably 90% of the answer. You aren't naturally only 2 inches high. See? You look at it as the ordinary condition of life now to be in a meat body and be quite small, you see. Actually, that is not the ordinary condition of life. That's an extraordinary condition of life. Very extraordinary. It takes quite a bit to get a person into that state. Every once in a while, you'll run into somebody and they're allergic to boot polish or something like this, you see. You ask them to recall a time when they swiped or ate their mother's boot polish or something, you see. And bang, they do. And bang, they're no longer allergic to boot polish. And you say, well, isn't this wonderful? Isn't this remarkable? Here I've achieved a near miracle. Oh, yes, you have. There's no doubt about that. What you haven't looked at is the unnaturalness to have an allergy to boot polish. That's terribly unnatural. Now, it takes a great deal of publicity, it takes a great deal of working at to keep everybody down. The enthusiasm that this has to be worked at is rather phenomenal. It does take $16 billion per annum appropriations on the part of the U.S. so-called government, with psychiatric treatments for one and all, and Siberia slated for anybody who doesn't agree with them politically. It takes that much money, it takes that much effort. It takes that many TV screens. It takes that many misguided mothers who said, "Johnny, you must not get your feet wet." It takes this whole operation has to be worked at. You've never looked at it as a worked at operation. You've looked at it as a rather natural operation. Well, not to introduce memoirs into the thing particularly, but you occasionally have not wanted to be pushed around. You just wanted to go and sit on a cloud for 9,000 years and recover. I almost tore up a valley one time on just this one basic fact. They wanted to give me some treatment. The treatment was no damn good. It was perfectly friendly treatment. Friendly. He got knocked out in the crash, see? Well, let's fix him up, you know. Whole attitude is, why the hell don't you go off someplace and get lost? I just want to sit here on this rock till my head stops spinning, see? Total ambition. No, I had to hand out treatment. Oh, you got to fix him up, please. Oh, wow. Very interesting. Because the funny part of it is, if I just sat on a rock for another 1,000 years or something like that and admired the sunsets and sunrises, why, I would have probably come out of almost anything I would have gotten into, don't you see? Because I wasn't being trapped there. Nothing bad was happening to me. But you never have these opportunities. The struggle a person has right now trying to get a vacation. And the glee with which some other people say they've just been on one. Now, this is an interesting thing. How come everybody wants a vacation? Well, actually, life is a very interesting activity. And if you were going at it hammer and tongs and were not being degraded in the process, why, you really wouldn't feel like you wanted a vacation. But that vacation is a token payment on the possible opportunity of having 100,000 years to sit on Mount Everest and admire the snowfall. Because you'd know you'd be better. The universe itself, if you delete incident from it, is therapeutic. Although you can look on this universe as a big basic trap, it's mostly a trap because it lets people get at people. It itself is not very operative in that direction. You could probably turn out, well, let's go way downscale, and let's take the spin bins. Look how busy they are in a spin bin. You ever been in a hospital? You're lying there, 6 o'clock in the morning, crash, on goes the lights, bang, the door opens. Somebody's standing there, thermometer, clunk. Here we go, man. Gotta do, you know. I think there's a hospital someplace, they were understaffed, and they produced some remarkable cures. the same time, it isn't true that if you just went on sitting still for any God's quantity of years, that you would necessarily get well. That isn't necessarily true either. It would all depend on what condition you were sitting still in. If you were sitting still in the head of an idol someplace in an abandoned temple for a few trillennia, you might not deteriorate, but you certainly wouldn't improve either. Now, all the power of choice has got to be there to sit still. And that's what gets overset entirely. The entire economic system that we have now is completely rigged to overthrow the power of choice to sit still. You can't do it, you see. Games are lots of fun, but here are enforced games. And, well, there's the game of overdraft. Overdraft at the bank. That's quite a game. It's no accident that money keeps inflating and people keep fooling with money, because the impulse is there to make the economic noose tighter and tighter and tighter and tighter. Where could you go right now and simply sit down in a meat body on this planet and be free of the economic clutches? Well, not too many years ago, you could go up to the backwoods of Alaska or something like that, or even no places, Montana, a little Kootenai country, something like that. You'd probably disappear in there, and years, decades would go by, and nobody even know you're around. You know, throw a sod hut or a log cabin together. Ah, these places are disappearing. And there are no desert islands now where you can go sit under the Pago Pago tree and make love to the local Wahines and have nothing to do. See, they've all been atom bombed or taken over by the Food and Drug Administration tonight. It's quite remarkable. It's quite remarkable, if you come right down to it, how all the progress level is directed toward, at this particular time, tightening the economic noose, and which, of course, shortens up the amount of available time you have, which, of course, gives you more problems, and which once more overthrows your power of choice. And so there's no chance to rest. Well, now, of course, if you're in good shape, you don't want to rest. But bad shape has to be maintained. People have to work at it to keep people in bad condition. That's something that you should take into your considerations as an auditor. You got a PC. Now, let me show you how far this goes. You got a PC, and you audit them up all week, inch by inch, and over the weekend they fall foot by foot. Oh, it's an interesting thing. Hardly any of us haven't run into this. Here we go. Somebody is working all weekend to make sure that enough problems are mounted up here and enough time is denied and enough this and that and the other thing is denied, enough arguments and trouble are thrown in the air to continue this type of status quo. You say, well, this person must be crazy to be trying to hold this other person down to this degree. No, they're just dramatizing. They're just not even dramatizing anything in the backtrack. They're just dramatizing current trend. Well, now, John, you go off all week getting audited like that, you see, and what do you think is happening to me here and the kiddies and so forth, and you realize that the rent is overdue and the meatballs are overdue and everything is overdue. And then, of course, there's installments on the furniture, and there's the and who do you think has to put out the cat every night, and so forth. And you can't go on like this. You realize that, and so forth. It's all just your introversion, after all. And what are you doing, putting out all that money for getting audited? You know, you've probably had this happen. to your PCs. Well, you say, what's going on? This person's keeping this other person down. Well, actually, not trying to keep the person down. They're just dramatizing the extant confusion. Then there has to be some feeling that if you leave some guy alone, why, he'll resurge. But it isn't true that if you leave him alone in a trap, he'll resurge, because his power of choice is missing. Now, how long can a person stay in a trap and not get any better, even though he's not being hurt? Well, I can tell you on very good authority, 13.94 trillion trillion years. And gain better. Why? Well, sitting in a mass. Didn't want to be there. See, the beingness factor is all knocked out. Power of choice knocked out, that sort of thing. You're sooner or later going to find PC, you're going to have incidents on that run up into trillions of trillions, maybe the thousands of trillions, you see. Maybe they've been sitting inside this volcano or something. Volcanoes don't last that long. Something more permanent. They've been stuck on this sun for trillions of trillions of trillions of years, you see. Big time periods, but all that time they are being harassed by the fact that they are not there by choice. They're harassed also by the engram of their original arrival, how they got into that state. They're protesting, in other words, their situation. And as long as a Thetan protests, he is not free. He won't get any better. That's why you can't enforce auditing on somebody. Well, you see some guy walking down the street and you say, hey, you're going to be audited. He says, what's that? You say, you'll find out. Funny part of it is you'd get away with it with some. They'd say, hey, what's this stuff? Hey, this is all right, you know, on some of them. But the bulk of them, just the fact that you had forced them to get audited on something they didn't even know what it was, eliminates power of choice from the auditing so completely that auditing is just a kind of a trap. You see? Power of choice factor is what has been overthrown there. They don't get better. Of course, it's a testimony to auditing that even auditing will even take care of that factor. You got a guy sitting there who is protesting the process all the way along the line. He's protesting the process all the way along the line. Well, unfortunately, he isn't going to get any better. He's going to stick himself in that protest. That protest against the process. That's all. He's just going to stick himself. It'd be better to run him on something that was too upgraded for him than he wasn't protesting that was just killing him. Fact. See? Than to run him up against this continuous protest. You take a PC who is trying to go earlier on the track while you're running a later on the track incident. The PC gradually mounts up to a higher and higher protest against not going earlier. He finally locks himself later on the track. See, it's as simple as that. This mechanic you should take into effect in auditing. Now, what you know and what you have in your possession as an auditor is actually data which has not been extant in this universe. And the longer I go, the surer I am of that fact. Now, there's been data about engrams in this universe. There's been data about mental image pictures. There's been data about all kinds of things, but there's not been data about auditing. Now, auditing perforce does not evaluate or invalidate, and when you audit a person against a person's wishes, well, momentarily in a session you sometimes push a guy through a CCH command and so forth, that is protesting, so forth. That's not what I mean. I mean, he didn't want to be audited. He is being audited, you see. Nothing's going to happen. Or if it does happen, you've got to be pretty heroic in the way you're making a gain. You've got to completely alter his idea that he wants to be there. Old failed help was one of the most effective mechanisms by which you did that. He knew he couldn't be helped because all help failed. Now, if you have this weapon, this tool called auditing, and so forth, what is the limit of its use? Well, I've just given you the reason why its use is limited. You can, to some degree, overthrow a person's protest by reorienting him on his power of choice. He finally, through habit and otherwise familiarity, recognizes that you are not trying to do him in, and therefore comes to want to be audited, not because he's overwhelmed, because you've changed his ideas on the subject. This is also very possible. So that really can't be considered a terrific limiter on the subject of auditing. Now, auditing is limited only by communication. It's the only thing auditing really limits. You could imagine yourself going on a horrendous sales talk there. Everybody on planet Zug is worshiping the god Baal, see? And their idea of really doing their family a good favor is make them feed their babies oftener to this idol. And, well, you say it'd take a long time to bring them around to any particular way of thinking. Oh, I don't know that it would. You wouldn't do it by suddenly overwhelming the lot of them and say, now look, that's the god Baal, but I happen to be the god Mug. And you're going to get mugged any minute if you just don't sit down and go into a co-audit here and straighten yourselves out. Well, oddly enough, that might even work too. But you mustn't get overwhelmed, completely canceled out of your catalog of tricks. Remember that. Don't cancel that out completely. But look on it as an administrative or a political tool, not as an auditing tool. Don't mix up these tools, you see. Well, one of the ways to do it would just be to say, well, if you guys don't stop worshiping Baal and get on the ball and kick its head off and get busy and set up a proper temple here to me, Mug, well, I'm going to scarify and scorchify the lot of you. In fact, there goes an acre of wheat right now. And they'd all say, gaw, coo, yes, sir. And you've pulled them along a while. Well, you might get them into communication, and then you could alter this overwhelm, don't you think? Force does have its role. Force does have a role. The only trouble is, force has never been a total answer. Force is not a total answer. People try to make it a total answer. Right now, most of the governments of Earth are conducting themselves on the basis of force. If you don't believe it, look at the appropriation that is given to weapons. See, that's their great belief in force. And yet none of them can fall back on force, and force has become absolutely useless in the field of government. It doesn't settle anything. One thing I've learned on the whole track has been that force is never the whole answer. But I've also learned, reverse way too, that a total absence of force is not the whole answer. You just try and build a mountain sometime ignoring force. I'm afraid you're not going to get much mountain built. But that is constructive force. So the way force is used has an awful lot to do with the value of force. And destructive uses of force has been the basic downfall of one and all. But you've got this whole planet that's feeding its babies to this fire god and that sort of thing, and you can't get them into communication. Well, you can't totally rule out destructive force. At least tip a couple of lightning bolts over there to the temple of Baal and blow his silly head off. And you say, oh, you see what happens to the worshippers of Baal, you see? He might get them in communication. But driving people toward auditing, that's a very difficult thing. But they are driven toward auditing. People are driven toward auditing by their somatics, by their illnesses, by their unhappiness, by their unwillingness to be what they are, where they are. And those things drive them toward auditing. So they are driven toward auditing, so you almost never get a PC on his own power of choice just to be audited. Very, very seldom. He's driven there at the best by his goals. Don't you see? Now, all of these things then sort out, well, what is power of choice? Well, power of choice could be many things, but if you're auditing a person in the direction of consenting to be audited, and then follow this by pushing him, auditing him in the direction where he isn't driven to be audited by his own condition, and then audit him in the direction, finally, of putting himself in a condition so he can help you smooth things out. This, of course, is a very usable pattern. And I don't care whether your pattern of auditing is preordained to be only on the PC's power of choice or not. Remember, there's always something driving the PC. To restore him to any condition where he's any feels any freedom or anything else, or is any value to himself or anybody else, to put him back into such a condition, you do have to, however, consult his power of choice. You can always make a person well, oddly enough, with auditing, without consulting his power of choice. Isn't that interesting? And it is just to that height only that previous mental therapy has reached. And that's physical therapy, too. That's the height that it reached. It got no further than that. It was all done more or less by force, and this thing called power of choice was never consulted. Interesting, isn't it? But in your hands, why, you have weapons which improve a person's power of choice, and he finally elects to be audited. You've seen that happen time after time. Well, that's a very safe route. So you never then find a pure power of choice to be audited. It's always monitored by little tiny factors, and these factors are more and more other determined the worse off a person is. See? So there is no absolute power of choice with regard to whether a person gets audited or doesn't get audited. And he has this horrible feeling that if he just would go sit someplace and be quiet or something like that, he might get well anyway. Well, that's an interesting feeling. I appreciate that feeling. I feel a great empathy with that feeling. It's fine. It's a nice feeling. Even though it's totally, completely impossible. Such a program in this universe will always be interfered with. Just as today, you're not going to find many wiles in which you could go and sit down comfortably in a log cabin of your own construction and get away from it all and remain away from it all from here on out, just as you could not do that now. I imagine there are a few places you could do that. There are a few bits and pieces left of the world rapidly being overwhelmed. So this universe, big, broad as it is, actually offers opportunities which are almost as few. Sounds incredible. Say, well, there's a deserted planet up there, and all you got to do is go up and sit on one of its mountaintops, and it hasn't any population for a long time because it had an atomic war a long time ago. Or there's an asteroid spinning around. If I could just go sit on this asteroid for a while, well, I'd be cheerful about the whole thing and take a rest and so forth. Well, I can tell you from personal experience here, you're really betting on one, man. That's very close to the impossible. I'm not going into any detailed private history. Old soldiers are always talking about the war that the younger generation has hardly even heard of. And I'm afraid old Thetans are always talking about the universes, planets, and organizations which have long since gone to dust. But I'll be forgiven by talking about an extant organization. And in the last 80 trillion years, with no change of identity, I've played hooky a number of times. 80 trillion years. See? I'm playing hooky right now, as a matter of fact. And all during that period of time, of course, that's not any great quantity of time. But remember, it is the last 80 trillion years ending up with right now. See? I've taken off 100,000 here and 250,000 there and 5 or 6 million someplace else and one time even a billion. Always got caught up with. Always did. It wasn't that anybody was sending for me, but it just wasn't that quiet. I remember the last time, almost gave up on this one. Almost gave up on this one. Found a valley where there wasn't a blessed living thing any place, in any direction, anywhere. Period. The sun was quite distant from that planet. Who the devil would ever want anything to do with that planet? It wasn't even very hospitable. There wasn't any living things on it. I sat down and decided to grow some plants. I thought that'd be a nice, peaceful occupation, just sit in this valley, you know, enough to worry about with anybody or anything of the sort. And I finally managed to coax into existence a few vines and that sort of thing, and flowers and things. It was getting quite nice around there. I fixed up a lake. It was getting better and better, you know. Rather hard to do because there wasn't much sunshine, you see. And I was just getting on my way pretty well, and all of a sudden, zoom, boom, and there was a spaceship. Now, I got pretty mad about the whole thing, as a matter of fact. It wasn't so much that their blast knocked down plants. I remember bringing a thunderstorm, moved it over the ship, moved it over a range of mountains, and then moved it back over the ship just to show them it was under control. And let them have it. They were back a couple of years later. We had a conversation, and I reported back to base. I mean, you give up on these things, you know. Apathetic. Apathetic about having a vacation. But there's a typical sequence. I'd figured I'd had a rough beef for the whole billion years before that, and I figured I ought to go someplace and sit still and just be quiet for a while, and that was all the good it did me. It's a noble ambition. I commend you for it. But I've never been able to make it work out. It works out to the degree that you flex your muscles a little bit better. But you're running up against a shortening cycle in this universe. The cumulative fact of the time track is the defeating fact. There is no other defeating fact than that. The cumulative effect of the time track. The more you live, the more pictures you got. And the more misadventures you have, the more engrams you've got. And the more engrams you've got, the more engrams can be keyed in. And the more engrams can be keyed in, the less events you can associate yourself with a free mind. And that is the dwindling spiral. I've just given it to you right there. That is it. There is nothing complicated about it. It's just no more complicated than that. A Thetan is his own trap. And time itself carrying forward adds a cumulative effect. I remember we had a press agent here for a while. I had to think up all of his press for him, and I got tired of having him tell me you couldn't get any publicity, so I finally had to let him go. But I remember one time his attitude toward our ideas in Scientology was, but, he said, that just says that I hadn't told him anything to amount to anything. I just told him that when you had an accident or something like that, you collected an engram. And he said rather disgustedly, well, that's the theory that the more things that happen to you, why, the more cumulative disaster you have. And he said that couldn't be true, and that made a total departure between him and Scientology. You see, he couldn't confront that fact, but that's the truth. That's the truth. So one period you might be able to stay 40, 50 trillion years sailing around doing beautiful ballet on the planets, you know? And then all of a sudden, this whistle bum goes by. It causes you to feel strange. You go back, you're not feeling so good. You decide you're not dancing so well. And the next thing you know, there'll be a whole chain of disastrous event. And bang, there you are, pushing a broom at Huskow University. Only the next time, it only lasts 30 trillion years. And the next time, it only lasts 10 trillion years. There it goes, you see. That is the basic difficulty that you're up against, that any being is up against. Now, there is another difficulty that you might become very interested in. That is a difficulty called organization and the way things should be run. Because Scientology is, at first glance, as any self-idiotic government agency would be the first to scent, death on organization. If organization contains seniorities. Let's look this over. Let's see why Scientology is not looked down on, but the fear in the chest when somebody looks at this. He recognizes that if Scientology, as little as he could understand of it, was let loose unlimitedly in this universe, it would end all caste-type organizations of whatever kind. I was eating breakfast this morning. I was wondering, how would I go about selling my compatriots in the Galactic Confederation on the idea of kicking out the meat-body psychiatrists and putting nothing but Scientologists in that particular line of activity? It was an interesting mental exercise. Interesting mental exercise. I could imagine the problems which would be thrown in my lap as a result. There's the hewers of wood and the drawers of water, don't you see? And there's the people who direct the hewers of wood and the drawers of water, and then there's the people and the beings who direct the people who direct the hewers of wood and the drawers of water. Never quite occurs to anybody to ask what you do in hewing wood and drawing water, but that's beside the point. Well, the Galactic Confederation is one of the most successful organizations at this universe has ever had, basically because it is based on an intermixture. It's composed of meat bodies, doll bodies, and free thetans. It's one of the very few that ever attempted this odd mixture. Of course, you get back on the whole track. You get back, well, I can tell you from personal experience, as short time ago as 33 trillion trillion years, practically present time, Only it doesn't seem like present time to me. My mind starts creaking a little bit on time when I start adding all that up. But from personal experience, at even that recent date, they were quite accustomed to having free thetans wandering around in towns. This was not an unaccustomed action. What kind of a town? Well, oddly enough, about 33 trillion trillion years ago, there was a society that was not too different from, I'd say, about 1920. Sort of 1920 with the rococo of the 19th century. See, the potted palm sort of motif, you know. The fedora hat, same clothes. The razzle-dazzle gent wore a striped shirt, see, wide striped shirt. See. The various signs and so forth. It looked quite odd. The buildings, like modern Gamages or something like that, you know. These things, no matter how much they seem to change. Ages after that, by the way, in the same locale, there was an Arabian civilization that didn't even know anything about automobiles or machinery or anything like that, but had lots of minarets and big turbans and baggy pants, you know, and horses. The universe goes backwards and forwards and upside down, but I'm beginning to wonder, because I'm looking almost in vain for a different type of society. You say, well, of course you couldn't find a different type of society because the type of society you've been living in at the present time is keyed in the types of society which are similar to it on the whole track. So therefore you aren't going to find any different types of society. I don't know. I didn't ask for any of these engrams to get keyed in particularly. I've been getting them keyed in all over this universe. I only find a half a dozen different society types. They're quite the same, and I find no boogies to amount to anything. And some stuff doing last night, I was looking at a Bentley, about a 1916 Bentley. Funny hood, and mixed up with a Western stagecoach. This was road traffic. And a Greyhound bus. 700 billion years ago, very modern. You know, all mixed up. Guy looking at this will think he's running dub if he doesn't watch it very carefully, because he gets the repetitive type of society. Saw a couple of implants, and in one of them there was nothing but West Point cadets, and in the other one there was nothing but Annapolis cadets. Well, it isn't that anybody was doing any dub, it's just the fact that that is what a cadet for the Army is supposed to dress like. Simple. Where do you suppose man, how does man get this terrific agreement without having experienced it? And that's how he's experienced it. Well, anyway, Thetans used to wander around towns like Gamages, you know. And they had traps and implants and so forth sitting in the town for the unwary Thetan to get blundered into. Like, you look into this box and you'll see all your life again, you know. Implants. Shoplifting, I think, was prevented by wire nets spread across goods on counters. If you can imagine London up here being with nice rigs so that free thetans wouldn't carry off all the hardware and so forth. Pretty mad. But no thetan at that time had been so antagonized that he had to consider himself three times as high as the Empire State Building. He'd just as soon be small peanuts along with anybody else. Funny admixtures of societies. And you'll find a society where there is no such thing as a spirit. All is scientific, you see. There is no soul. Man came from mud. The only cure and treatment is a biochemical shot in the gluteus maximus. You find such a society, you even find them that depraved, such as Earth, 1963. Weird beliefs. They shift all over the place, in other words. But an admixture of social strata, and I do mean social strata because it falls immediately into the ability and power stratas. That one who can throw the biggest lightning bolt of course, is normally considered to be chief, mostly because he'd argue if he weren't. And you get downscale, and you get the more active characters, such as dolls, and then you go downscale, and you get the meat body, and then you go downscale, and you get the politician. And the situation which develops is that Scientology injected in any mixed-up society where you have pre-Thetans, doll bodies, meat bodies, or any other downgrade of that. There's also other downgrades that have Thetans in them. Some robots have Thetans in them. And horses, dogs, cats, game animals, birds, insects. These are social strata. I don't care if it... They're not sentient social strata, totally, because the guy's pretty far out by the time he's running an ant. But the situation is that you're looking at a scale of social castes. These are castes. And the caste system shatters the moment that you can take a human being and process him up to a level of doll body. What about the self-respecting doll? The self-respecting doll at that moment would be the first one to protest processing a meat body up to the level of dolls. Interesting. All right, so you take the dolls and you process the dolls, and you move them up toward a category of free Thetan. Who's going to protest there? Well, free Thetan's going to protest, that's for sure. He's going to say, well, who's going to hew the wood and push the spaceship? See? You know? Who's going to stand there and rivet this stuff? And how are we going to establish seniority, man? And one of the first things the Galactic Confederation would ask, well, what are you going to do? I mean, what's your seniority rating? So on. Well, actually, you could work it out. You'd say, well, he got everybody's records. And they have. So, all right. So this character's been a doll body. Been a sergeant at arms on planet Zed for quite some time as a doll, and with the time we get him processed, we're not going to penalize him or something or other, so we've made a free Thetan out of him. Well, I'm afraid that he would have seniority over somebody who had only been his corporal. In other words, you'd have to leave the status quo. Carefully record the status quo. Unfortunately, this leaves a free Thetan pushing a broom someplace or another. But who said that a free Thetan shouldn't or couldn't push a broom? Now, the whole argument explodes in the face of this. Well, who says that people have got to be at that level to do those things? See, that's the lie that is introduced in the situation. For instance, in the last few hundred billion, why the quality of motor or engine being turned out in space vessels in the Galactic Federation has been very poor. Why? They blow up every now and then. One of the first questions you ask after you've had an ARC break with a couple of blow-ups of this particular character is, what the hell are we doing using spaceships? Well, if spaceships are necessary to carry the troops. Well, you say, well, what are you carrying troops for? Because a free Thetan in the first place could go in and swamp up the lot. And usually does, to open up the gates or something like that and let the troops into the citadel. Sort of looks like a now I'm supposed to chain which is going on here, see? Kind of weird, isn't it? And after a crash, why, you always have to pick the dolls out of their heads because dolls can't get out of their heads. Human beings can, but dolls can't. Kind of grim thought, isn't it? And free Thetan, pick one up and salvage him out of a wreck. And here we get back to auditing again. Oh, there's lots of pattern auditings. Doll has a head, inside a head, about the size of your fist. You know, these puppet these puppet things they turn out, you know, that you put on your hand like a glove, you know, wiggle the fingers. And well, a doll without the little hands on the thing and without the head is what the Thetan looks like. See, it's just that little skirt. So you take him, take a ball, sort of like a trap with a couple of holes in it so he can see out of it, and shove him up into this metal trap thing. Okay? Then you pick up the head of the doll body and you put him in there into a cradle inside the head, and he extends into a helical arrangement down into the body by which he can then manipulate, so forth, the body. They get pretty good at it. But a doll body is actually a trap to end all traps. Because the body's light and because he isn't always being beaten around, they last for a long time and so forth. But a doll is in a trap. Now, Free Thetan, to take a doll out of a wreck, pulls the doll body's head off, you know, like lifting off a diver's helmet, picks this ball out of the dome, pulls the Thetan out of the ball, see, and goes, in other words, throws out a beam that burns up his facsimiles of shock. And says, go on home, tell him where the wreck is, and the doll says, aye, aye, and he's away. As a Free Thetan. Tiny one. Interesting. Interesting. But look at that. That's very interesting because that's a therapy. That's an outside exterior therapy where somebody else is doing it, but it gives you an open sesame to what do you do about ants? What do you do about ducks? And what do you do about cats? Funny part of it is that a Free Thetan could pick up a duck and go, there'd be no residue left. The Thetan that was occupying that duck would at that moment be free and be clear, albeit cleared by somebody else. What about the facsimile? Well, he'd go on for a short time and start mocking him up again, of course, because it's not on his own power of choice, but it leaves him momentarily free. Do you see that? Interesting from a standpoint. There is a wave, then, that can be projected at an individual that would erase his engrams. Quite interesting, isn't it? But would they stay erased for very long? Well, not until the guy kind of himself got re-stimulated and keyed him in and so forth. It would just be what was in re-stimulation at that moment would get wiped out. Now, this was psychotherapy, and you'll see some residues of this, called picturology. And it consisted of putting a guy to sleep with a ray or a beam, which is simply energy moving at a certain vibration, nothing very mysterious about that, which induces hypnosis or sleep. You take one of these clack sticks, like they have in front of the Hollywood cameras, you put this guy to sleep, and you know what he's been looking at. See, he's been in an accident or something like that. So you know the scenery he must have in the incident. He talked about this, is why some artists write script. They're probably familiar with the method. Take a picture, of what he's been looking at. And hold it up in front of his face. Take one of these clapsticks and go like that. Take another copy of it with a different view. Hold it up, let him see it. Take this big stick and go. See, he's sitting there, comatose. Hold up another picture of it, another slightly different view. Take this clapstick. After a while, Thetan all of a sudden groggily starts to get the idea. So he takes the pictures that he himself has been looking at, and he goes and smashes them. By mimicry. We want you to smash up this picture, and so Satan, in a groggy state, goes ahead and smashes up the picture. Auditing. The most modern and advanced auditing that the universe ever developed is right there. Never developed anything any better than that. You have to select the picture. You select it 100%, down to the scene and viewpoint. What if the guy isn't sitting in the picture? What if that isn't the picture he's sitting in? Well, forget about that. What if you bypass some charge in it? Well, we don't know why he's cross. And what happens after this has been done? Well, a Scientologist could run the whole incident from beginning to end untouched. And have the additional bonus of having to run out the erasure of the picture. Sequence two. All it actually did was operate as a key in. I think this is quite interesting. I'm very interested. Now there's other data and bric-a-brac of that kind. But look at the evaluation. You choose the picture for the PC, 100%. It's all right to say, all right, we want you to go to a certain part of the track and let's see if we can find anything. Oh, no, no, this is total evaluation. We've got to have a picture of a pine tree over on the right, and there's got to be a rock over on the left. Now, you find the picture with the pine tree and the rock. There it is. Idiotic, because it might not even be in Gramic. You talk about a hit or miss proposition, then. Well, how did they know if they were working this on a pre-Thetan? How did they know that he was even sitting in the chair if this was a meat body psychiatrist doing this? That's an interesting point, but they used to have meters. Some of you are allergic to meters because you realize that meters are normally used by meat bodies, societies, to detect the presence of a thetan. And in such a therapy room, there'll be a great big dial, not unlike an E-meter dial, this part of the dial, a black dial. And as long as the thetan is in the chair, it, of course, is registering because the chair is hooked up to the meter. So there's an aura registering, but somebody's in connection with this thing, and therefore he is detectable. Now, on the Helitrobus implants and so forth, if you're ever unlucky enough to get derailed and so forth in the Helitrobus implants, you would have seen a workman come up walking forward with a box pointed toward the pole. You know, kind of ducked and scared stiff. But, because you might be a big thetan, you see, he might not have been that little thetan they thought. And walking up toward the pole, see, to find out if there's somebody on the pole or not. Bad visio. That's what's the matter. Their eyes are shot. It isn't that thetans are invisible at all. As a matter of fact, they aren't invisible. They are very visible. And, however, if you cut that whole top stratum off of your perception, why, you probably couldn't see pink or green traffic lights either. See, I mean, there's people colorblind. Well, people in meat bodies, through fear and otherwise, go wave blind at the wave. Actually, thetans are very visible, particularly if you condense one or freeze one. Then he looks like an old black glove without any fingers in it. Now, talking about therapy at large then, you are actually being asked to grapple then with something for which you have no historic background. You haven't any track background for this. I've probably given you a sample of possibly the only track background you might have connected with in this particular line, you see. The ideas of being big and little, and how did you go over this cycle? The idea of somebody standing up and perfectly beneficially, without being angry at you at all, trying to get you to get rid of a picture by slapping a clapstick in front of your face or something like that. The idea that if you could just sit still long enough and breathe under your own power of choice, why, you would somehow or another go free. These are the background music. And as far as a person being a PC is concerned, does he want to be audited? Doesn't he want to be audited? How much is he driven to be audited? What is causing him to be audited? All of these various other factors add up into the thing. His power of choice has to be consulted to this degree. And that is, in a nutshell, practically all the background anybody's got pre-Dianetics and Scientology on this whole subject. Sometimes people have Freudian background or psychological background, but not to be sarcastic at all, because I'd never slap at old Papa Freud, but the basis is, wow, this is a long way from home, man. I don't know, you start counting witch doctor stuff if you count that in, don't you think? That's about the same level of operation. So there's very little preconception here. Now, you get somebody who's been a psychoanalytic patient, and you try to audit him, it shows up at once. He'll start telling you that he has traumas caused by fixations, that he keeps trying to run engrams of having made a pass for his little sister or something like this, you think. And it shows up almost at once what he's looking for. And the thing to do with that, rather cruelly, is just take him to his first psychoanalytic session and scan him rapidly through to his last one. Do that two or three times, and he won't have any more trouble. You sometimes also pick up data that the analyst picked up that you can use in running engrams. We've also done that. It, of course, makes him recover the ulcers and things like that that he's been cured of. That's the cruelest thing I ever did. I said, this poor devil had been 5 years or something like, maybe seven. He was the assistant editor of Collier's Magazine. The poor devil. And he'd been going to that analyst, you know, and been eating humble pie and being careful and digging up these times when he thought lascivious thoughts about the wrong thing. And he'd just been having an awful time. He'd been vast amount of money. I think he must have spent $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 doing all this. And so forth. And I got so tired of him trying to pick up his Eudipidus lipopsis or something of the sort that I finally said in disgust to him, this is many, many years ago, I said, all right, let's pick up your first Freudian treatment. And we did. Had a little trouble, but we finally got it. Scan rapidly through to the last treatment. That's fine. All right, let's do that again. Do that again. Then I found out the poor guy had been treated for ulcers. His stomach looked like Swiss cheese, you know, full of holes. And by the time I finished this, he just doubled up in the auditing chair and then doubled up on the floor, and I thought he was going into prenatal. He wasn't. His ulcers had just come on full bloom. Well, there was the only thing that happened is they'd put him on some kind of a suppress ridge so great that they had managed to suppress the pain of the ulcers. And of course, the second you scanned him through all these years of travail, why, there he was with a complete full-blown set of ulcers. So I'd like to finish the story and go on and tell you that I audited him on up then so that he didn't have to worry about ulcers. But as a matter of fact, he wouldn't publish a favorable article, and I never did. Anyway. But the essence of the thing is you have, as a student of Dianetics and Scientology, my sympathy to this degree, is you're going in against a no-background action. I've given you just about the totality of the background of this particular subject. Now, the people who are beings who are in the universe, that are still communicating and still alive, have, however, arrived at a point where they can reverse very easily and start up again. And you'll get more vectors starting them up than you will pressing them down. Governments are forgetting more and more how to govern and that sort of thing. There'd be less and less argument posed against processing and so forth. But in actual fact, what do you have? You have a brand new trend. And a brand new trend, it's not necessarily they catch on slowly. They don't necessarily catch on slowly at all. Brand new trends sometimes go faster than old trends. But certainly, to this degree, it gives you no benefit from your own past track, except as a PC, you get reality on this and that and so forth. But you haven't got large quantity of data. Now, if you were a sergeant in the Army trying to teach a private how to shoot on a rifle range, you would be bounteously assisted and or disastrously held up by the person's past skill. If a guy can shoot or he can't shoot, and that's just about what sergeants do. They pick out a few guys that can shoot, and these guys are, well, we'll keep them in the lines. And these guys over here, they're hopeless. Don't let them near a rifle and so forth. Well, what are they doing? They're just cashing in directly on the training they had before the Battle of Bunker Hill, and before that, the training they had was and backtrack, and when they were a doll. And guy can't shoot left-handed because dolls carry their weapons on the left-hand side, and he committed too many overts on that, but he shoots all right as long as you give him a right-hand holster. These things change, but you're cashing in all the time on the person's background, and you're practically training in automaticity. You take some guy sent in the university and say, you're going to be an atomic scientist. Well, why do you want to be an atomic scientist? Well, he doesn't know. He just has a feeling. Wears his hair in the exact design of an atom bomb, you know? And there he is. There he is. You're training an atomic scientist whose aggregate training on the subject of atomic science put together would make an IBM computer awful sick in its gears. The figure would be so tremendous. You take some pilot, you teach this guy to be a pilot. What have you got? You've got somebody there, my God, he's been flying airplanes. Either can fly or can't fly, and you find most instructors have just come on down to that. What are you doing? You're picking up the whole guy's background, and teaching is then simply a method of re-stimulation. That's all. We got a brand new subject here. There's nothing. The more you re-stimulate, the less the guy's going to learn. I mean, it's quite reverse because there's nothing there to re-stimulate. There is no past training on Dianetics or Scientology. As far as your PC is concerned, the contrary is true, though. As I was telling you about the editor, assistant editor Collier's, you do get a conflict. Because you'll get somebody into picturology. In fact, anybody's been on the whole track has sometime or another had somebody smashing a clapstick in front of his face. See? Maybe not often. Maybe some of you will find a PC whose Helitrobus implant series and so forth has been very nicely erased by this particular method. It's all there, you see, and it's totally aberrative on the PC. But after you've finished up running the whole Helitrobus implant, then you've got to take care of the treatment. And it's twice as bad as the implant. Anyhow, this PC, however, can mistake the auditor for past schools and past actions. He can make a bad mistake that way. PC sitting across the auditing table holding, he sees the auditor as somebody maybe who's sitting there holding up a picture, don't you see? Or an implanter or a hypnotist or something like this. He can get himself screwed up on this particular subject. That's why an auditor has to act more like an auditor than an auditor. Because you can key in awfully easily past therapy on somebody that was therapy, that wasn't therapy, don't you think? Now, you tell a guy to go into an incident, and he's liable to get the idea that you're implanting him, and, you know, all kinds of weird things, because a PC isn't too bright. He's down there amongst the energy waves and the anatan, and he isn't thinking too easily. So he gets confusions much more easily. You just remember that all past therapies overthrew his power of choice exclusively as an operation and an action. They were dedicated to this. The one factor you can alter is not overthrow his power of choice, but rehabilitate his power of choice if he's very, very difficult as a PC. You've always got that one in your locker. Now, it's one thing to say never take a PC's orders, but remember that never means when a PC is confused, upset, in the middle of an ARC break, he'll tell you silly things. Well, that means don't take those silly things. But sometimes a PC, even though he's pretty ARC breaking, can tell you exactly what is wrong. Well, if you don't take those things, knowing yourself that that is what is wrong, you're overthrowing his and your power of choice at the same time. So there is nothing wrong at all with taking a PC's hints and his orders as far as that's concerned. But taking his orders only occurs after you've ARC broken him very hard. He won't give you orders up to that time, just give you data. The ARC breaking heart, he starts getting orders. And then the next thing you know, these orders start coming out of the middle of implants. They come out of engramic phrases. They do this and that. And you can just ruin him. That's why you say never. And never take a PC's orders. But that means when he's ARC broken, upset, he'll just give you a confusing bunch of junk. I know I myself, getting an auditor orders, wound myself around the meter about 3 reps, you know. What you ought to do is go back to, you know. The auditor then realized that I must be pretty confused at that particular point and go back to it. Oh, no. It's the reason you shouldn't, of course, is what's wrong is totally unknown to the PC, or it wouldn't be wrong. Now, you get different ARC break assessments for different levels. There are different assessments. There's a different assessment for each level on that state of K scale. And the engram running one only has a couple. That's just bypassed engram, earlier engram, an earlier beginning. Or have I got the date or duration wrong? That's two questions. Got the duration wrong or the date wrong. And you'll find most ARC breaks in engram running stem from getting the wrong duration for the engram. Nothing more elementary than that. It isn't the earlier incident, it's wrong duration. That's the bypass charge. But that wasn't what I set out to tell you. I just say, well, these are the various problems, and this is the history of psychotherapy in this particular universe, given to you on a very limited scale. There could be a much fancier bunch of data connected with it. There could be a lot of ramifications. We could take in the witch doctors. We could take in all kinds of people. We could take in psychiatrists in general. We could give you probably billions of words of description of the various practices of the Ugbug tribe along the Moscow River, methods of psychotherapy. We could get very, very catalogic, but that is not psychotherapy. That's just dramatization. They weren't trying to do anything for anybody. The point I'm making is you yourself have a few points that you can put together and remember in handling PCs and in learning auditing. And they depend to some degree on history, and I think maybe some of the data I've given you might be of some assistance. Thank you. Thank you.